If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hit it! That was really loud. We are live with this edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for this Wednesday, July 2, 2014, alongside irritable Ian Ferguson.
How do you do?
My name is Pat Contry. I haven't used that line in forever. We have a huge show lined up for you this evening. We're going to be talking about lots of stuff, including the IESF esports segregation scandal going on right now. We're going to be talking about Ian's review of Shovel Knight, the indie game that just came out, the platformer. We might discuss the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 2 trailer. New forms of scamming online. It's what did you know? People are trying to screw you over for old games
in new ways.
We're talking about WWE pay-per-view Money in the Bank and Raw Thoughts, as well as Cena, going to be on the cover of 2K14. 2K15. We'll be talking about fake NWCs for sale on Craigslist. Talking about Crytek maybe going under, it looks like.
Yeah.
And then Ian added Atari allowing Denny's to use iconic games as advertising. And your Q&A, which we have pre-selected because now there's a ton of questions. So, Ian, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, sir?
I could be better, so I want you to talk so I can recover from that long-winded monologue.
Oh, you know, first of all, I have a old friend here with me today, the Tecate tall boy.
T-Kate.
T-Kate. I feel like a lot of people have been wondering where Tecate has been hiding out in your local grocer's cooler. So I went and got some grocers. Yes, your green grocer's cooler.
Or if you're on the East Coast in Jersey, at the liquor store.
At the liquor store. I have been playing a lot more games lately since my acquisition of a Wii U. Mario Kart 8 has become something of a small obsession, and it's not even that I'm playing a ton of it, but it's just so easy to pop on at night and play with people that are on your friends list. I've been playing with people like Allie and Rue.
8-bit Allie.
Yes. And a lot of the people who actually listen to the podcast. And it's been fun. It's been real fun because I usually finish in last place. So I get to give all of these people who support me, I get to support them with extra points in the standings because I lose constantly.
You just throw the games on purpose?
No, I don't throw the games on purpose. I think you
do. This is the Black Sox scandal of 1917.
I give back to the community. Mario Kart 8's been great. Vani and I actually made, a bunch of huge steps on our wedding, so a lot of the stress from that is going away. And other than that, I'm going to be working most of July until we get to Comic-Con. So, that's been me. What about you there, Tiger?
I look exhausted because I am. Yeah. Usually I either look better than I feel, or look worse than I feel. I think this week I look exactly how I feel. I look terrible. So, I think you should agree. I've been having a rough few weeks.
You're just smoldering.
Smoldering?
Yes.
Is that what the term is?
Yes. You just have these smoldering eyes.
Are we having a moment here?
I don't think any man or woman could deny that. Could deny you right now.
I've had a rough month. Retron 5 video, rushed that out because Hyperkin decided they weren't going to send me their unit on time. Then I had the WF games come out. And then this podcast, keeping money in the bank for us, keeping money in the till. And then, most importantly, a little project that I've completed. If you've seen on the Cinemasker website and YouTube channel the past few months, I've done a few of the James and Mike plays videos. Really, really fun. They do it every Monday. It's just a Let's Play.
Let's Player?
I'm a Let's Player.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, so there's a reason that
Let's Play Pat's a sellout.
I'm a sellout? So there's a reason why I was there, not just to, visit my pals James and Mike, but also to do a video with my pal James, James Rolfe. And that video, by the time you hear this on iTunes or Stitcher or thepunkfight.com, you'll be seeing the season 6 finale of Pat the NES Punk, co-starring the angry video game nerd / James Rolfe, portrayed by James Rolfe. And I'm exhausted because just editing it, getting it out there, just took a lot out of me, obviously, you can see. And plus, we were filming Video Game Years, you know, last Wednesday, or Thursday, we filmed it. Thursday. And then it takes a whole day of my time just to...
Good thing we can do that with our stupid caps on.
Exactly. And then it takes me a whole day just to render those videos and get them uploaded. I don't just upload the raw files because they're huge. I have to render them all individually to MP4, and there's like 28 different files. Now we're in a Video Game Years territory where it's like 25 subjects. You have to once you get to like 86, 84, 85. I think we officially went to like 25 plus subjects per year. So now I'm exhausted.
I want to go back to the James and Mike thing real quick, though.
Okay.
Because I do have a question, because I've known you the entire time you've worked with him. What was your original in with working with him? Was it when you asked for a marathon video, or had you already done something with him before you had contacted him about doing a video for the first marathon? I honestly don't remember. I'm trying to remember how this came about.
I met James at SGC 2010. So way back. It was the first convention I actually had a panel at. And at the time, I think I only had maybe 2,000 YouTube subscribers, so 2 years in. And I emailed James on a lark.
2009, 2010, when was our first marathon? Because if it's 2014...
That was 2010. This is the 5th anniversary this year, big guy. So anyway, it's the same year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So basically, what happened was I emailed him, and I said, hey, James, we're both from Jersey, both kind of filmmakers. I did film in college, not many people do. I did a feature-length film, I did a couple of short films, even though it wasn't my major. I said, you know, I sent him like, my Action 52 review, I think. I sent him like maybe the Black Box game review. I definitely sent him Russian Attack, since that had just come out. And that was my first sort of like big video in terms of like the huge Rob fight, which took like 6 hours to shoot. Nowadays, it probably only take me a few hours, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I still don't, according to you. I sent him Flea Market Madness, and he probably got like, he probably literally gets 200 emails a day from strangers. He responded to me after a couple of weeks, and I was like, wow. And he said, hey, he basically said, I'm not giving away private information, but he said, hey, I enjoyed your videos. You know, maybe we could, just say hi to each other and meet up at SGC. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Right.
So I remember at SGC, and SGC 2010 is not like SGC now. SGC 2010 was really centered on fans of the website. Now it's sort of grown to something like kind of like MAGFest in a way. They get people from all over the internet. And so I remember James coming out of his panel room, and I literally like, almost walked into him. He was like, he just like walked out, like, and he was mobbed, and he saw me, and he said, oh, you know, hey, you know, you can walk with me and, you know, hang out, because he's getting mobbed by all these fans.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah, it was just sort of one of those weird moments. Was like, you know, because I didn't know him, so I was like, you know, it's always weird. It's almost harder for me, it's always weirder to make friends with a guy versus even trying to like, you know, hit on a girl. To me, it's almost more awkward. For whatever reason. And so, because like, where do you go from, hey, we're pals? So we hung out, you know, and we got along. He came to my panel, my death slot, 10 a.m. No one was there. I remember it was literally like 20 people, my first panel. Mark Carr helped me out. And it was, out of those 20, though, it was Pro Jared, Spoonie, and James Rolfe.
Right.
Out of the 20. Not a bad, you know, company. You know, I was friends with Jared. We'd spoken back and forth. We weren't like, we didn't know each other as well as we did now, but we knew each other, you know. And that's, I think, when Jared basically started working on the website when he moved. I think he moved out to Texas by that point. And then I just communicated with Spoonie Noah over email, so he showed up, and it was great of those guys to do that, to give me a chance. So yeah, that's how we met up. Yeah. So,
Well, it should be big for you tomorrow and for both of you. Didn't you say that you were, isn't it going to be like a dual release?
Yep. Yeah, well, by the time you listen to this, it's a spoiler if you didn't. It's going to be split on YouTube between, basically, it's two reviews. And so, I really enjoy writing the character of the angry video game nerd. And I guess if this comes across as like I'm kissing James's ass, I don't give a shit. Because the character is ingenious, obviously. No one thought of a character like that on the internet before, else it would have been done. You know, a guy that's angry, yells about games that you shouldn't care about in theory, because who cares about games that are 25, 30 years old? You know, nowadays, it's like, oh, everyone does that, but no one did that before him.
Sure.
There's a couple of guys who maybe wrote articles, but no one was doing that in video form.
So I've had the opportunity to write the character about a handful of times, if you include the short, the shorts, the exclusive videos during the marathon, writing the NWC World Champions video from 3 years ago, which we co-wrote, and then writing this episode that came out. And writing to me, as I've said in the past, is always my favorite part of the process. It's what comes easiest to me. It always has, even as a kid, writing. I don't enjoy editing that much. To me, that's like a necessary evil. And directing, I do enjoy directing. So this was like a cool opportunity, and I really am thankful and grateful that James allowed me to like take the ABJN character in even slightly different directions.
Right.
Because it's like it's great enough that he's going to use that character, because he's very protective of the character, rightfully so. Because it's iconic. It is iconic when it comes to the internet. Like, when you think of internet character shows, like, there's really no one more well-known at this point. You make an argument for people that are bigger on YouTube, like guys like PewDiePie, but that's not iconic to me. That's just a guy on YouTube doing Let's Plays. This is an actual character, so.
And me.
So, yeah, I enjoy writing for the character. When you write for something like this, I'm not going to say it's like writing for, like, a Marvel movie, but you are entrusted a character that you have to work with. And so there are things you have to abide by when writing for that character.
No, I think that's a very apt description. I think you can use that. It is like when a superhero gets passed off to another writing team. I mean, it's any time a character gets passed around, whether it's a movie or a comic book. I mean, that's exactly what it is. And you have to write the character within the boundaries that are generally accepted for that character. Yeah. That's why I didn't like... Not to harp on, but that's why I didn't like Man of Steel. I didn't feel like they stayed within the boundaries of the character. Mm-hmm. If you don't stay within the boundaries of Angry Video Game Nerd when you're writing him, that's going to upset people.
Yeah, and I guess I was lucky enough that, I did the... Well, the Top Secret episode wasn't the nerd. That was just James. That was the first one. And then River City Ransom, Sky Kid, which was last year's one.
Mm-hmm.
And then James wrote the Bubble Bobble short exclusive from a year and a half ago. So I guess he knew that I could have the ability to actually write it. And know what I was doing to write this, I guess, feature length for the internet. It's like 17 minutes long. Of course, I plan to be only like 12, but it's always gets blown out of proportion. So yeah, it's interesting because it's like that. There's a line you have to walk in terms of staying within, again, the boundaries of the character you're entrusted with. But then I wanted to do something at least a little bit different and explore areas that either for whatever reason. That James never wanted to explore, or just maybe never thought of it. I don't know, but or maybe it doesn't fit his series to go in different directions. Where I'm sort of like, all right, what if this happened to the character? What if he interacted with someone this way? And it's playing off of the Pat character.
Well, when it's a split episode too, you can play around a little bit more, and it feels less permanent, and you can do a little bit more with it.
Oh, sure, but it's the same tone throughout, though.
Sure,
you know, so it's split down the middle in terms of it. But I'm just happy. I think it came out well. The video from that we did in 2011 there was no review in it. It was more of a skit. It was just a dramatic scene, really, you know, fighting over this old game, you know, and having it be destroyed. Well, this is more of a style of a blend of, you know, both, I guess, quote unquote, YouTube worlds, YouTube series worlds, you know, those videos you never watch, Pat the NES Punk. So
fuck off. All right, well, I will actually watch that one tomorrow.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So let's dive into some of our other topics for this week. I want to take off with the... this was a big one today, and man, is it a load of fucking horse cock. The International Esports Federation. So a little bit of background here. Esports, everyone should know what these are, but if you don't, esports is competitive gaming that is being taken to the next level.
Electronic sports.
Right. It's highly competitive stuff with very little in the way of random nature generally. It's things like StarCraft, DOTA, League of Legends.
What's DOTA?
I think it's like a League of Legends thing. I don't know. I always see it on the things. But it's another one of those games that I don't play. Fighting games are included. I don't play those games.
It's funny that sports games usually aren't included in esports. Right?
Well, they are in a different way, but I think what this is, it's supposed, you know, esports are supposed to show you what you can do with a competitive video game that's not like a normal sport. I think is what they're trying to show. So, anyways, esports have been taking off, and there's tournaments, there's lots of cash prizes, there's, you know, you have to be able to register for the bigger games and stuff. And one of these, the IESF, came to the attention of a lot of people today. And what
happened
was...
Are they one of the major esports
leagues? They're one
of
many, but they are a bigger one.
Okay.
Now, what happened was, is the initial drama started when Hearthstone, which is a card game like Magic.
Online card game?
Yeah, an online card game by the people who do World of Warcraft.
Okay.
I think it was a Finnish qualifying tournament, and they were saying that it was for male players of the game only. And it created an uproar. And in the rules, it said they were doing this to prevent tricky situations such as a female winner in round 8. And a lot of people got mad at them, and they said,
what,
no.
What does that mean?
Well, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
You know, they wanted to prevent a female winner in round 8, which would have been the finals of that qualifying tournament. A lot of people got upset, and they're like, why are you doing this? And they're like, whoa, this tournament, specifically the Finnish qualifying tournament, said, look, we'd love to have women players, but the IESF will not allow it. The IESF will only allow male competitors in their Hearthstone competition.
So they're the governing body that's in charge of this
right,
tournament.
Right, that's
rules.
Where the final is going to be in Azerbaijan and all that. So when contacted, they were incredibly, like, just crass about it. And they said, well, we want to be taken seriously as a sport, and all sports separate men and women.
But it's not a
sport. And it's just fucking enraging because it's... Okay, here's my problem. Look. We've talked about a few topics. I'm going to try to stay very calm here. We've talked about a few topics on here where I can be seen as a, I don't know, a fucking social justice warrior, whatever the people
call it. Hippie liberal.
Hippie liberal, whatever the fuck people have, name people have for me now. But the thing is this. Too many people deny the fact that there is sexism in gaming within the actual industry, among the players. And if you want to look me dead in the face right now and tell me that it's not an issue... You're just fucking avoiding it because you don't want to confront something difficult head on. Whether you've agreed with me in the past, here it is in your fucking face. There is no difference in musculature and that matters for a game like StarCraft or a game like Hearthstone. There is absolutely zero differences between men and women that should have them separated other than the only response they give, the arbitrary decision that because other sports, physical sports, separate between men and women, they had to as well.
Okay, well, this is to the detriment, and this is like, first of all, I take umbrage with the fact that they call these esports. I said it before. I'm a fan of both sports and video games. I think they're totally different. I think that calling it esports is detrimental to actual physical sports. That aside, when the strength of video gaming is the fact that you don't require physicality, when anyone can play, age. You know, sex, you're frail, you're big, you're fat, you're skinny. Why would you then try to get away from what's so inclusive about your gaming?
Right, one of the best things about gaming is its inclusiveness.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it's making any sense.
Why arbitrarily separate it? And like I said, they had zero answers other than, well, other sports do it.
It's not a sport, though.
And here's the thing. I actually disagree. I don't get nearly as upset over the esports label as
I'm
you
not
do.
Upset. It doesn't make any sense. But
I feel like it's a term that was decided on early on, and it works well enough. Fine. Esports, whatever. But then they got enough backlash, and now they say they're listening to the fans and they're thinking about it, but there was pretty much no one out there who thought that this was a good idea. Like I said, even the Finnish tournament was like, guys, I know you're upset, and we're pissed about this too, but we can't. We are either part of this tournament or we're not, and these are the rules that they've laid out.
Okay, so where's the IESF based at? You know?
South Korea.
Okay, so this is the first time they've done this officially?
I don't know if it is. I think it's just being shown. What also needs to be stated, and I don't have the list in front of me, is that they actually separated the games by gender too. Tekken Tag Tournament 2 is female only. Ultra Super Street Fighter 4 was only males.
That doesn't make any sense.
Hearthstone was only male. I think Dota was only male. And then there was one other one that was... Oh, StarCraft was divided up between the two.
I have the list right here. The other things the IESF wants to... They want to increase the number of member nations They want to train referees through their human resources program, host an international esports world championship. That's their goal, and this is how they're trying to appeal by splitting.
Well, they also say somewhere
sexes. I don't know.
They also say somewhere in there that they want to, and this is so fucking limp-wristed and bullshit. We want to highlight the accomplishments of female gamers, then mix everyone together
and
let a female come out on top.
Yeah, this is almost like.
Males and females together, like let them fight then, if that's what you want to show.
Well, that's really then, and this is where when people are against affirmative action, where it's like, it's almost like, okay, we're gonna keep them separate, so their accomplishments come out, because we don't think they're gonna accomplish anything on their own if they're mixed with men.
Right.
That's basically what you're saying.
Yeah. No, that's not basically that is what you're saying, and it sounds like
you're saying that if you put. Obviously, we know it's almost never going to be 50-50 in any of these tournaments, but even if it's, say, 90-10 or 95-5, they're basically, by doing this, saying women are not good enough to compete with the men.
Right.
That's basically what they're saying, which is obviously horseshit, because Street Fighter 2, there's no difference. This isn't UFC, where men having whatever percentage more muscle mass, upper body, 40% more, whatever it is, we have different joints and our hips are built differently than women. That's just physiological facts. For gaming, it shouldn't matter at all. Get in there, throw them all together, and play and see what happens.
Bonnie beats the shit out of me at Marvel vs. Capcom 2 every time, pretty much.
Well, that's to be expected. Look at you.
Anyway, so yeah. Anyways, that got me real fired up this morning, and I'm glad that we can just both agree that that's a whole lot of horseshit. I'm glad to see that most of the internet is agreeing that it's a whole lot of fucking dog balls. But I'm interested to see what the response is. With the amount of pressure on them, I would be very, very surprised if not this tournament, if next tournament, they just mix everything.
What I think is funny is that there's really misguided calculation that, wow, if we pretend that we look like the Olympics, people are going to treat us like the Olympics.
No, they're not. No, that's so dumb.
You're not. Just go off the strengths of what video gaming has.
If I wear underwear on the outside of my pants, I'm not magically going to be able to fly.
This isn't a track and field event. This is playing online card games, which I still have to wrap my head around. I feel old. All right, what's next?
I don't know. What do you want to do next here?
What's down the list here? This is a short one about, I guess, someone discovered the DD version of Mario 64. So the DD was an add-on in Japan. Never came out in the U.S. for the N64, where it was basically a CD system add-on.
Disk drive. Yeah, and it's interesting for just two reasons to me. One, that it was even in the works. Two, the only real noticeable difference so far, although they haven't really dug too deep into this yet, is the sound quality, the music quality is much better, obviously, than it is on a cartridge. You know, on a cartridge, they're compressing it to hell and back. But on something like this, a CD-type disk drive, they can obviously use a much higher quality audio.
Sure.
So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see if in the future they find any real differences in the game in there, any changes. Are there going to be any textural updates or anything like that? What they found so far was two bugs in it, because it's probably a pre-release version. Well, it is a pre-release version. And even the guy who owns it, who was talking in the YouTube video, said that he himself isn't even sure if the glitches are due to something like disc rot or scratches, or if it's, you know, just something that's in the pre-build. So it'll be interesting to see how far they can get, even before it crashes out.
Looking at the games, I had no idea. I don't know much about this. I mean, I don't think I've even seen one before. I don't know how much they even go for. But there's only like 12 games that were released for it?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was late in the lifespan. It looks like they were released in late 99 and 2000. By then, they were already well in development of probably the GameCube by 2000. So it was like, why did they even bother?
Yeah, the only two things that I know of are...
F-Zero expansion. I've heard of that.
Yeah, the F-Zero expansion.
That I've heard of.
And the big game for it was supposed to be some RPG. I believe it was like a giant, some giant.
Well, they had SimCity 64. I'd be interested in taking a look at that.
Sure.
I didn't know they had that. That'd be cool. So, yeah, it's just interesting to me how they still find stuff like this, like, 20 years after these systems come out, or 15 years.
This goes on our glitch topic from the last podcast. You know what I mean? You know, 25, 30 years later, 10 years later, it's nice to know that we're always going to find out something cool about our favorite systems.
Yeah. Like, you know,
even if it's years later.
A few years back, or it was only 2 years back, really, I think, when they discovered the gray car versions of Turok Rage Wars for the N64, they were like, I think, was it Acclaim produced like 100 because there was a glitch in like the multiplayer, one of the multiplayer, I think,
it's a bug
trophies
fix.
Or something. It was a bug fix. And so they produced these cartridges probably because one or two people mailed in and complained or called them up and complained. So they probably mailed out a few of them, but the rest of them were just laying around. No one cared. And then they finally came out to market. And of course, hoarders bought like 8 to 10 of them each. And now I think they originally were being sold for like $20. I didn't grab. I was like, who cares? It's Truck Rage Wars. It's a terrible game. And then now they go for like $100 probably, something like that. But yeah, we'll see what the next sort of big find is. It seems like they're coming out lately. Speaking of that, this came out I think today about discovery of the holographic stickers that were going to be released originally on the Sonic 2 cartridge.
Yeah, talk about more treasures. These are really cool looking, and it's kind of a shame they didn't, but I know why they couldn't possibly do packaging with them. That would have gotten really, really expensive.
You think so?
Yes. Yeah, I think that would have been probably a bit expensive for a game that was mass-produced like Sonic the Hedgehog 2. But they're cool. I think the main one shows like Sonic and Tails leaning on a 2.
Yeah.
And the Mega Drive logo is holographic. And, I mean, yeah, just to go back to what we were saying, it's neat to constantly see this sort of stuff. Like, where did this guy find this? Like, it looks like a roll or a half roll of these things. Where did you find them?
It was released on the Twitter account of the Sega of America's ex-director of marketing, Al Nilsson, it looks like. So it looks like, the picture is like 3 on this roll that they got printed specially, maybe as a demonstration. And then they said, yeah, these are going to be real expensive versus just printing color labels. Yeah. So it probably would have cost like 10 times the price or whatever. How much? I mean, where do you get holographic stuff printed? You can't go to Kinko's and get holographic images made.
I love holograms, though. That would be so cool to have. Like,
they were big in
Sonic.
The 80s and 90s, weren't they?
Oh, they were huge.
On comic books, holographic.
Way for the goddamn colors. Future. If you got a hologram. If you got a hologram card in, like, your sports pack or your Mad Magazine pack, and you were a kid who knew nothing about cards, you were like, this is worth $100.
Oh, my God, my X-Force comic has a hologram on it.
$100. I'm going to the card shop. I'm getting so much Tearjerker's gum.
X-Men number 75 has a hologram on it. Wolverine's getting his bones pulled out by Magneto. This is awesome. You know. I just thought that was interesting.
It is.
That's all. Did you take a look at the... the Ninja Turtles 2 trailer at all?
Fuck it. Why do we have to constantly keep flogging me with this shit? Yeah, I did take a look at the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 trailer, and here's what I have to say. The only thing that I thought that looked good from the original production shots before trailers and from the original trailer was I thought the Shredder suit looked bad ass.
It did. It was like in the silhouette on the wall or whatever.
It was very cool. And I thought there was a production shot, it might have just been a miniature shot, of like what looked like a human in the suit walking. And you watch the trailer, and it's a fucking, it's like a robot that throws Ginsu blades, dude. I mean, why am I supposed to want to go see this?
So it's like you're saying you don't think it's even a guy in the suit? It's going to be a robot?
I mean, dude, I watched the trailer through a crack in my hand.
And tears.
And tears. So many tears. So many bitter fucking ancient tears, but it doesn't. It looked like a shitty robot, and I'm sure at some point they'll find a way to put a guy in there. But oh my god, there's a shot in the trailer where he like goes like this, and literally it looks like he's throwing like 8 fucking like French rocker blades that you get at the county fairs, you know, from the guy who's selling, you know, the unbeatable knives but without handles. And
sure,
it looked awful.
The Yoshi blades.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean. Fuck it. Some of it looks like, I don't know, in the end, I was watching, I'm like, I don't even care anymore, and maybe it won't be awful, but I just want it to be over and done with and out of theaters so I don't have to think about it.
Well, the good news is, he's talking to a guy in the shadows that maybe it's a Japanese guy who's actually Shredder. It's a possibility. It's a possibility. Will that get you back on board to purchase a matinee ticket?
No.
I still would?
No.
Oh, I tried. Now, at least they poked fun at the fact that originally the concept was supposed to be these were aliens.
That I thought that part was funny
in the trailer. So then in the trailer they go, oh, they're not aliens. Oh, that'd be stupid. They're turtles.
Yeah.
And they're ninjas, they say. So it's like, at least they acknowledge that. I don't know. This could be a dumb sort of, like, when it's on FX channel, like, a year from now or 8 months from now, I'll watch it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Despite all my fire and bluster, I am mostly just fire and bluster. And if this is ever on Netflix and Vonnie and I are super bored and we're like, well, okay, let's go make a few rum and cokes. I might watch it through a fog, but I'm just not going to the theater.
You will watch it so you can rail on it on the next CU podcast.
No, I'm not watching it in theaters. Anyway, yeah, F that, whatever.
F that noise.
So, I would like to talk briefly, maybe a little bit longer, because I feel like I could spin off on this, about a game that came out, I think it was last week, I got it this week, and it's been heavily hyped for probably a year at least, Shovel Knight. And I doubt that there's anyone who's listening who doesn't know about it, but let me tell you about Shovel Knight a little bit if you don't. Shovel Knight is a 2D platformer.
It was a Kickstarter, right, originally?
That I actually don't know. I believe so. It's a 2D platformer made by Yacht Games, and it's on a lot of systems. It's on Wii U, 3DS. I think it's going to be on Vita and PS3 at the very least, if not some other systems. So what's interesting about Shovel Knight, you look at it, and it's another retro-styled 2D platformer, meaning the art is it's pixel art. Okay, it's that
in between 8 and 16-bit sort
right.
of look.
It's meant to harken back to the 8 16-bit era. It uses all chiptune music, and you know it's level based and it's fairly straightforward. And what amazes me about Shovel Knight, and I'm going to sound like kind of a dick here, is that I downloaded it, and not only do I not dislike it, I think it's fucking genius. It's a brilliant game.
So how are you a dick?
Well, because
besides everything else that makes you a dick, how are you a dick in this instance?
Unfortunately, I think a lot of these retro-themed platformers are half-baked, and they only get it part right. They focus too much on the graphics and the music, but they don't nail the gameplay. The control sucks.
Most important.
It's slippery.
Yes.
Or they will focus a lot on making the game really hard, but they won't focus on making the game fun, and the graphics won't be, you know, particularly well, or they'll be a mishmash, like they won't seem cohesive. So what makes Shovel Knight so great is that it's got this beautiful difficulty curve. It's got these amazing large sprites. It's got all these mechanics and all these little nods to various games.
We'll talk about the mechanics a little
bit. But it doesn't rip them wholeheartedly or rely on them. So as Shovel Knight, you have to go and rescue Shield Knight. And Shovel Knight's main way of attacking is with the shovel. Now, you can slash with the shovel like a sword.
Okay.
It just gives you a single slash. Or, and they quoted it as, a direct influence, heavily influenced by DuckTales, which is why I was so interested, you can do a pogo jump with the shovel.
Well, it's totally possible in real life, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Same with a cane, obviously, you know, with an oaken cane or whatever. So the thing is it's a little bit different. You just jump and you press down and you point the shovel down. And if you hit an enemy or other certain objects, you can keep bouncing. But if you hit the floor, you stop, unlike in DuckTales where you can just bounce all over the place. So you have to be a bit more precise with your jumps. Towns are very reminiscent of Zelda 2. In the fact that they are side-scrolling and you can talk to characters and you can find... You can't go inside buildings, but you can find buildings and upgrade your health and get your magic. There's even people hidden in rooms that look similar to the mage's room from Zelda 2 where you can learn new moves or do other things. It's got a little bit of a Mega Man flair to it, I would say mostly in terms of the sound. The music is quite good. I don't like it quite as much as I think everyone else is enjoying it, but it is a very good soundtrack, and it's got kind of this up-tempo thing going for it that is common in a lot of Mega Mans. It's got world maps like a Mario 3. There's bosses at the end of every main stage with really fun patterns that you have to learn to avoid and attack. There's secondary items you can use like Castlevania that you collect vials for.
Wow.
So it mixes and matches all the stuff, but it never feels like it's trying too hard. And it does get challenging quick, and there's a lot of extras to find. But it seems like a game, and I'm probably halfway through the first run through. It's just a game that seems like there's a ton of things that you can do. For $15, this is the first time a game has ever said that it is going to play like a retro game and look like a retro game, and I feel like it's actually backed that up.
Now, did you get it for the Wii U or Steam, or where'd you get it?
I got it for the Wii U.
Okay.
Why? Because I just got a Wii U. I was playing Wii U, and I knew I wanted the game, but I saw it up there, and I decided I wanted to download it. Now, this is where something that I rail on Nintendo for comes into play. I'm really upset that Nintendo doesn't do a cross-by-cross-play thing, because if this is on... And I could be wrong, but I'm just going to guess. If this is on PS3, I guarantee you if I bought it for the PS3, it would be on my Vita. I can't play it on my 3DS as well. I would have to buy another $15 copy of Shovel Knight.
Yeah, that's a huge failure.
Yeah.
Because that'll turn some people off.
That will turn some people off. Now, yeah. I'm okay with having... Now, here's the thing. The levels are incredibly long. Like, in no way during this game are you really going to feel shortchanged. Like, the levels are long. Actually, if I had almost one beef with the game, it's that the levels, they don't get boring, but, like, just because of how difficult they can get, there's, like, 5 checkpoints per level, and between certain checkpoints, you'll be like, where the hell is the next checkpoint? So it's almost not particularly great for portable, despite the fact that you can sleep the 3DS, because you kind of have to be able to sit down and work your way through the level, beat the boss, and all that.
Oh, sure.
So, anyways, I mean... I don't want to give away too much. I don't want to spoil a lot. There's a lot of really awesome, cute moments. A lot of really cool big enemies. A lot of just what the fuck stuff where, like, it makes you smile and it makes you happy. Vani, who wasn't playing it, looked up because I was laughing about something, and she saw something that was going on screen with one of the good guy characters who is half something and half something. That should be enough for people who have played it. And Vani put down the book and watched everything that was going on. She's like, this is brilliant. You know, this is really cool. So I would really urge people to go out and get it. If you've ever, and I don't want to sound like a dick, but if you've ever been burned by, like, a Way Forward game, if you ever bought, like, I don't know, for instance, the Adventure Time game or one of the games where, like,
Or DuckTales.
Or whatever.
DuckTales Remastered.
Yeah, I didn't play it. I don't need to now. Shovel Knight.
You promised to play DuckTales Remastered.
Shovel Knight has replaced it.
You promised to play it for the podcast.
Shovel Knight's the new person in town.
Promised.
Yeah, maybe I will after this and be extra well, like, this is extra crap. But I'm just saying, if you've ever bought any game that promised you, like, a retro experience and you've been burned and you're looking at this and you're squinting your eyes and you're like, I don't know, I can't speak for everyone, but I would almost promise you that you are not going to be disappointed by this.
And the good news is that this is, you hear a lot of horror stories when it comes to, and this was kickstarted.
Okay.
You hear a lot of horror stories from Kickstarter games, and they either never come out or the funds go away. This raised $311,000. Their goal was only $75,000. So obviously, the money went into the game.
Oh, you it can did. See it. I can say
so
that.
So that's good news. So obviously, when you put the resources into it, you're going to have a good product, and everyone's going to buy it. Because this, to me, this is like the biggest indie game I've heard of since, like, Super Meat Boy.
And
this
it's their
huge.
Debut.
Yeah, well, there you go. So they'll be able to produce all these... Off the bank they're making off of this, they'll be able to make a few more games.
Well, off the goodwill. I mean, of the fact that they ran a Kickstarter that they didn't botch, of the fact that they put out a game that was exactly as they described it. These people have a very bright future in front of them.
All right, pay us, Yacht Gum. Yacht Games, pay us.
Yacht Gum? Is that a special type of gum for rich people? It tastes like money.
Yacht Gum, the official gum sponsor of the CU Podcast. Are you going out for a trip around the Chesapeake? Yacht Gum.
Smell like money all the time.
I'm just tired. I'm so fucking tired.
I know, yeah. So why don't you tell us about this new form of scamming?
You look so mischievous, Ian.
This will wake you up.
With your come hither stare. Which one? You know, there's a lot. Okay, this was alerted.
There's a lot of ways of scamming.
Well, this is the one that is one I had not seen before. So the problem with CD games is that they're a lot more easier to make than cards. A lot more. Fortunately, scammers have not really, at least I know of, haven't really gravitated towards trying to sell repro CDs, as far as I know.
Sapphire on the PC Engine is the only one I can think of.
Can you think of a few others? The only thing I can think of is I think maybe Philips, like CDI demos that were rare, something like this is like years back. I heard like rumblings of people trying to create those because the CD is just if you can find the CD that was manufactured on, like for example Philips CDI, get a Philips CD. You're halfway there if you can find one that came out back then, you know. And then you just have to find the data and then know how to properly burn it. And then there's so much easier to fake artwork on a CD than on a cart, it's just easier to do it because it's not as defined, I think, overall, you know, versus on a clear
layer. You're talking like a dot printed, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
So now you can do it, well, get professional. You can buy, go in a store and for you know, $50 buy a CD burner that has it included, that you can do both.
Oh, jeez.
You know, we're talking about, or at least, or you can print the nice labels. Anyway, the whole point is this. I had not seen this before, ever, that someone was trying to sell a rare CD game until now. And I think we might have to start instituting the, like, scumbag seller of the week.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about this more and more. And if we have to start calling these people out, we will. So, for example, I'm going to call out on eBay, sell for sale. C as in cat, sell for sale. Trying to sell Sega CD Snatcher CDs, the game disc print.
There's no data on these.
There's no data.
What they're for is, obviously, so someone can buy one and burn it. And he actually says, I believe somewhere in his listing, that if you want to talk to him about getting reproduction artwork, you can call him and set up, I think it even says something like, set up an order, like multiples.
You want me to read the description?
Yeah.
I'll read it. I'm giving you advertising, asshole. Brand new writable disc with Sega CD game Snatcher art printed on. This disc contains no data, so it is not a bootleg. It's still illegal because it's copyrighted, though, but it's still not a bootleg. But it is writable and brand new, so you can put any data, music, or files you choose. You know what? I'm going to get this Snatcher CD, and I want to put pictures from my godson's bar mitzvah on it or whatever. That's what I'm going to do with this.
I'm going to put...
I'm not even Jewish, and I'm still going to do that.
I'm just going to make a couple of weird copies of Halo 1 down in it and just fucking, you know, send those out to Nine Inch Nails fans on Snatcher CD.
You want my 80s MP3 mix CD?
Yeah.
On a Snatcher CD? Now's your chance. Art is printed directly onto the disc, unlike cheap sticker labels. Oh, so it's just like how it was produced back in the late 90s. Additional photos provided show other prints compared to originals. Contact me if you want any other CD, DVD, or video game covers printed, and we can do a transaction through eBay. Oh, that's how nice! He's advertising the fact that he's doing something highly illegal.
Yeah. So, this is what I have to say about it, beyond the fact that he's a fucking scumbag, is when... And there's a reason I brought up Sapphire. They found ways to determine the differences between the bootleg Sapphire CDs and the legitimate Sapphire CDs fairly quickly. Thicker inner rings, the serial numbers, you gotta look for certain numbers within a certain batch, the coloring. The coloring is gonna be a big thing. So, you know, hopefully if this becomes widespread, we will find a database or someone will make one where they can show you, just like they did with Sapphire, how to determine what's a bootleg CD and what's not. All I know is that this is going to make my job really fucking difficult. The next Snatcher that comes in, I'm going to look at the guy and I'm basically going to be like, you fucking kidding with me? And if he kind of like is like, what? Then maybe I'll take him, you know,
hey, forget about it.
Forget about it. And then maybe I'll take him a little bit more seriously. But
well, here's the problem. And this is always an argument with assholes that actually condone this activity by saying, well, it's the responsibility of the person buying it to know. Fuck off. Just fuck off. It's the responsibility of assholes selling stuff that's illegal and getting away with it. That's the problem. It's not the problem that... you know, if someone gets into collecting and they see someone selling a Snatcher CD that's fake and they don't know it for like $75, they're like, wow, this is a deal. And then they buy it. Oh, it's their fault. No, it's not, asshole. It's not their fault.
It's not their fault.
Because when the police get called into anything like that, it's not the fault of the person buying it.
They're
not arresting them. They're arresting the person that's selling the fake Prada bags. That's the one that they're arresting, you know. And it's just a shame. Like you said, that you're going to get into this in this situation, maybe not 6 months from now, maybe a few years, where who the hell knows what happens.
I dread the day, and I hope it never happens, but I dread the day that Luna sells its first bootleg by accident or gets caught buying
then,
a bootleg.
Because then it's on you for
because
selling
it's
it.
It's on us. And with all of these different... Look, I one of the first things I teach employees is how to spot bootleg Pokemon cards, because they're everywhere. And I teach them how to look for various other bootleg things. But I can't teach everyone everything, and on a busy Saturday, Traig and I don't have the time necessarily to always go everything with a, you know, a magnifying glass. Now, on expensive items like something like this, we would be sure to go over it with a fine-tooth comb. But I just, the day that one gets by us and we get called out is the day that I don't want to fucking sell video games anymore. You guys are... No, it's not an awe thing. It's these people are fucking killing it for me.
Yeah, you can now go online and buy, I think they're from South America, Flintstone Surprise at Dinosaur Peak boxes and manuals. Yeah, the set for like $20 plus shipping, I think it's something like that. It's just, Jesus Christ.
Everyone knows not to pull that shit in the store. We would just look at it and be like, you were fucking out of your mind. Oh, this looks crispy and brand new. Get it the fuck out the store. Yeah.
No, but it doesn't take someone with even a little bit of ingenuity or intelligence to like rumple it a little bit or crinkle it to make it look like it's used. That's the problem. Or beat it against like a stone to make it look like worn.
Yeah, but I don't think a lot of those people would be smart enough to do such a thing.
You don't know. You really don't know. It's a shame. So we're going to start putting more asshole sellers on blast. Every other week, I think, on the CU podcast.
Yeah, why not?
I don't care if I get a hit put out at me when I go to like some of these conventions from by some of these asshole sellers. It's worth it. I'll be a martyr. So, Self for Sale, you are the official scumbag seller of the week. Woo!
You are 100% rotten feces. Way to go.
And speaking of people that are assholes and scumbags, and this happens more and more, where you'll just go on Craigslist or you hear about Craigslist. People try to sell, like, I don't know if they're just doing it for fun, but try to sell, like, Nintendo World Championships cards. And the last few that I was alerted to, I looked at the number on the NWC Grays and saw that, you know, they're individually numbered. Thank God they are, because then you can check usually a list on a website like NintendoAge.com, which tracks who owns them.
Right.
And, of course, the last one I saw was owned by someone. So there was one for sale locally in San Diego. I think there was a couple weeks ago, but there was one for sale nearby for like $40,000 at one point. And it's like, I don't know what gets into people. First of all, if you actually own an NWC cart like that, Craigslist is not the place to sell it. Well, because you can either end up getting mugged or killed or who knows what. You're not going to meet someone in a Denny's parking lot to exchange like a $30,000 or even $10,000 game.
Here's what I think is the first sign of it being a scam. It's exactly what you said. It's if you're attaching an overinflated price tag like $40,000 to a gold NWC, then you know that by putting out it on Craigslist, you're trying to pull something. If you see an NWC gold cart on Craigslist for $45, which you never would anymore, that's just someone who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But $40,000, you're not someone who accidentally stumbled upon it and goes, you know, I think this is worth $40,000. Let's get rid of it to the local tweakers and put it on Craigslist.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, no, you're going to put it on an eBay site or an auction site.
Or all the resellers now every day. I haven't gotten a Craigslist deal in like 2.5 years at this point, because all the resellers, they get them as soon as they happen. So you think they're going to pay more than the market price for a rare game? No. You're going to put a game like this on eBay. You're going to let the forums know about that it's on there.
Yeah.
You're going to get tons of traffic. It might go mainstream on like Yahoo auctions, like the Stadium Events auction did in 2010. This is actually less than 10 minutes away. And it's a shame. I guess all of us NWC owners have to start stamping our image on some of these.
Be like the Apple One Club. You know, I mean, there's an Apple One Club.
There's an Apple One.
It's like 52 people who actually own Apple Ones, so that if someone else is trying to sell you an Apple One or has an image or something like that, you can go and verify if it's actually an Apple One.
Okay, so they had that going on.
Yeah.
How many Apple Ones were produced, by the way? Like 100, 150, something like that?
No, if there's only 52 or so remaining, there was probably, I would say probably, it was only sold as a kit.
Yes.
I'm sure that someone else would know better than I did. It's in the low hundreds.
If I find that at the swap meet, I'll go nuts.
Yeah, you know? That doesn't even have a monitor, I think, natively.
No, it doesn't.
It has an LED display that basically tells you, like, shows you. It's basically an over-glorified calculator.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. So, I would, this one does not have a phone number on it. It did. So I don't know if they're trying to fuck with people, or maybe they know someone they don't like, and are going to have someone's, have someone get calls about, I'm not selling an NWC cart. Otherwise, I mean, you're not supposed to give out phone numbers illegally. Then again, it's online, so I think it is legal if it's online. But anyway, it would have been fun to give them a phone call. Maybe in the future, if we sell one, we'll see when we'll do one for the hell of it.
Yeah.
And I'll use my Google Voice number so they can't give out my real phone number. So there you go. Nintendo NWC golds for sale all over the place. All over San Diego.
They are.
Okay. I hope this asshole, maybe he's trying to impersonate me. I don't know.
That's pretty big-headed.
Well, who else is San Diego's going to have one?
Him, obviously. It's legit and real.
Okay, then I'll get two. I'm, gonna, yeah, I'm cornering that market.
Yeah, cornering.
People try to corner the state events, complete in box market. I'm cornering the NWC gold market. Steve Lin, I'm coming after your copy.
According to my cupboards, I'm trying to corner the Lucky Charms market. I have a lot of Lucky Charms right now. They must have been on sale. They just appeared.
That sounds healthy.
Oh,
you five eating Lucky Charms still?
Well, I'm fucking 31 goddamn years old, and I'll eat Lucky Charms all I damn well please.
When's your birthday?
August 9th.
Haha, everyone knows now.
So ah, fuck! Fuck, I kept that mostly secret for so long.
You want to talk about Crytek, the makers of Crysis and Rise, not paying their staff and canceling Rise 2.
Oh, God. Okay, so I mostly picked this just because I think it's a larger statement on, like, AAA game making and big studios. But
how fragile they are?
How fragile they are, and they are fragile exactly because they feel like they have to make these AAA games that, you know, squeeze budgets down to the last penny and go over and stuff like that. But basically, Crytek UK staff has not been paid full wages since April. They got partial wages in the middle of June, and then they were supposed to get the rest of some wages at the end of June, and they never saw them. These are the guys who made Crysis. These are the guys who made Rise. They were working on Rise 2, and they're currently working on Homefront Revolution, the sequel to that shitty THQ game that no one, absolutely no one, needed a sequel to. And that, I think, speaks volumes. The reason why you can't pay your fucking staff on time is because you're making shit no one needs, that no one asked for, that no one wanted. You canceled a game that didn't get particularly good reviews, and then you dumped off a bunch of staff and pulled a bunch of staff in to work on a game that no one else asked for, and you can't get money? You can't get money to these people? You don't have budgets for these shit games?
I always looked at the Crysis series as, holy shit, there's great graphics. There's no game there. You know, like one of those.
Well, and I had heard, I believe it was from someone, that Crytek had also recently mentioned. They do not mention it in this article, so I'm going off on hearsay here, but they were talking about moving into free-to-play. And that would considerably, I think, free-to-play, I don't think, is really panning out for a lot of people. I think that's starting to show as a poor trend.
Well, you can't sustain yourself if these are huge titles.
Right.
I mean, I'm just flabbergasted. First of all, I totally forgot Homefront existed.
Yeah.
That's like the Red Dawn game, basically.
Yeah. So are you ready for the sequel? Are we going to go wait in line at midnight? Day one, are we going to get this?
And this was more insane about it. They were working on it with, according to this article, 90 developers were working, 90 people on Homefront the Revolution, 90 people?
I can't wait to bro through this in one fucking night. Me and you, dog. We're just going to
We're going to hide behind that blown out yellow bus on the streets, and we're going to have a good old time.
We're paying $60 a piece, and we're going to get one night's of gaming.
What is it? It's the North Koreans? Who is it supposed to be? Is it Chinese?
I think it's different this time.
The Chinese got pissed, so it became the North Koreans, because we're allowed to piss them off.
But
what a disaster!
Yeah, so 40 staff have left, and issues with salaries have added to that number, is what they have been saying. They've also said that a number of people had been promoted, but the promotion was really just kind of a scam, because if you get promoted, you receive a small boost in wages.
Okay.
Yet you have to give 3 months before you leave because they're bleeding staff.
That's hysterical.
So
that's ingenious.
So their answer was promote people, but then tell them that they need to give 3 months' notice before they quit.
So it's basically 3 months of free workers.
Yeah,
with the promise of maybe paying you more.
You're trapped.
Yeah, that's. I would look at them and be like, wait a second, you didn't pay anyone else the past few weeks. You want me to stay? What?
So, anyways, I mean,
it's a shame.
All that means right now, I mean, is, you know, I feel bad for the employees, and I never really thought of. I mean, I don't pay attention to AAA games really, but I never thought of them as a company that would run into these problems. I guess the reason I thought that is just because Crysis, and I've never played them. Crysis 2, Crysis 3, they were all considered to be fairly decent games by people who had played them. I never had, but then to see this going on. Yeah, I mean, big loss, I guess, for everyone with an Xbox One. They don't get Rise 2. Microsoft said, well, you know, depending on things, we may still find a way to get that done. I don't know, through another developer who owns the rights to it.
Yeah,
but,
who's going
to
do it?
But that, the thing is it wasn't a game that anyone particularly loved. So that's the thing with this shit. So many of these AAA studios now think, we made a game, now we're going to make a sequel to the game. Because that's what we have to do, because that's what video games do. But also, secretly, it's because we already have the assets for it, and we don't have to put a whole lot of work into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But still, with that, the home, what is it, Homeland?
Homefront,
not Revolution. Homeworld. It's not Homeworld. It's not that cool Homeworld game.
Little House on the Prairie. Place.
Jesus, just run your business better. If you come out with one game that's successful, just stop. Sometimes just stop.
Yeah.
You think Leland Corporation went back to Danny Silva's Indie Heat 2? No! They had their hit, they got it done, they had an instant classic, and they moved on! What's so difficult about that?
Are you clipping by any chance? I don't think so. You're just coming through very loud right now.
Follow Leland Corporation's brilliant move. That's what I'm saying.
All right. We'll follow Leland Corporation's brilliant move and kill all the colonists.
Okay. We'll do that.
Yeah. Anyways. Whatever. That's a bunch of shit.
Let's talk about a little wrestling.
I unfortunately did not get a chance to watch Money in the Bank. I wanted to, but just with things going on, I didn't get to it yet. I probably will watch some of the key matches, but go ahead and lead on this. I'd like to. I heard it was a good Raw. What I did hear, I just want to say this. This excites me oh very much, is I am so ready for Wyatt Jericho.
Oh, yeah. So thanks for spoiling that. So basically,
it's not a spoiler. It's fucking Wednesday night. This happened on Monday.
Spoilers, damn it. So basically, the WWE is in a bit of a transition right now. Ever since WrestleMania, where they're starting to push a lot of the younger talent. Thankfully, the Wyatt family, the Shield, is there. Daniel Bryan, we'll talk about, really starting to push the guys that deserve to be pushed, and they're younger and they're hungry and they want to just go for that opportunity. So they broke up the Shield. Which was, I thought, a little premature, but not a bad move. And they did the proper... We spoke about why Seth Rollins was the proper choice. And right now, it's coming to fruition with that. So Money in the Bank pay-per-view, since Daniel Bryan, non-kayfabe, is injured, a neck injury, unfortunately, could be career-threatening, as it turns out. At the pay-per-view, they had two Money in the Bank ladder matches. One for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, which was won by John Cena. And one... just for the number one contender with the case, basically. You can cash in whenever you want.
Yeah.
And it's happened, with the exception of two people. John Cena 1 year cashed in and did not win because he actually set up the match beforehand. And then Damian Sandow, who won it, and then for some reason, all of a sudden, everyone decided this guy's a piece of shit, and now he's just a comic character in the company. He lost his to John Cena, actually, ironically. So Seth Rollins won the Money in the Bank contract. Out of a field of really good wrestlers, you had guys that you knew were not going to win it, like Kofi Kingston. Kingston's one of those mid-carders that really entertaining, really good wrestler.
Yeah, he's just never going anywhere.
He might get like the U.S. title, but he's never going to be a world champion. You know that. Guys like, you know, like Jack Swagger, it's the same sort of deal. Even though they're good for what they are, but they're not great. Dolph Ziggler,
Jack Swagger.
You don't like Jack Swagger?
This guy. Why does he keep getting pushed? Why does he keep getting brought back?
He has talent. He does have talent. He's very talented.
No, he's mediocre at best.
No, he's
got
born
a
mediocre.
DWI this year, and he's effectively, he's not very good.
Oh, he had a drink. He drove his Deanna Takate, and he drove home.
If he drove home after a Takate, he would have tested 0-0 on the alcohol scale because this is piss water.
Oh, really?
It's piss water that I drink, but it's piss water.
But anyway. So Seth Rollins wins it. Seth Rollins has only been wrestling on Raw and for WWE for like a year and a half. They came in around Survivor Series in 2012. So
I can't believe they put the title back on Cena.
Well, we'll talk about that. Their options are pretty freaking limited.
Yeah, I know. Their roster is getting thinned out, and not for usual reasons, for unfortunately sad reasons.
I mean, so Daniel Bryan comes out on the pay-per-view. Daniel Bryan had a neck surgery. He was expected to be out originally only like 5-6 weeks.
Yeah.
So at first they're like, okay, we'll leave him off one pay-per-view, keep him the champ. But afterwards they're like, wow, this is more serious than we thought. So they had to take the title off him because you can't have you need a champion for your company. You can't have a guy be out for 6 months. So Daniel Bryan actually came to the pay-per-view and said, hey, I don't have strength in one of my arms. I might need another surgery. He basically said, I don't know what's going to happen, you know? obviously he's optimistic, he wants to come back, but this is what happened to guys like Arn Anderson, where they start losing feeling in their arms, they have a, then they're done. It's this, too dangerous to come back.
This is what happened to so many wrestlers who've wrestled through injuries they shouldn't
Edge,
have.
You know?
Macho Man never should have come back after his spinal and neck problems.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I mean, like, none of these wrestlers should have come back. I mean, I hate to say it, but wrestling takes a lot of people young. Part of it is drugs and abuse, but another part is...
It's wear and tear.
It's wear and tear because they work through shit they shouldn't work through. So I hate to say it, I'd rather see Daniel Bryan hang it up young than be dead at 55.
Yeah. So you needed a new champion, and I am not upset with them making John Cena the champion, because who are you going to hotshot the title to? No one's ready to take that title. Cesaro's not at that level yet. He's getting there, but they couldn't give Cesaro the title at this stage. And plus, there's someone lurking that's going to come back and probably fight for it. Brock Lesnar is going to probably come back some point this year, whether it's SummerSlam. I think the original plan was to have a Brock Lesnar-Daniel Bryan match sometime this year. That would have been huge.
Yeah.
It would have been gigantic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this, it's just unfortunate that Daniel Bryan, he wrestles for what it's been, at least a dozen years he's been wrestling. He's wrestled since he's like 19 or whatever.
I remember watching him in like 2001 or 2002.
Yeah, so, and he has this go-all-out style, which is what made him the most popular wrestler on the planet. Go-all-out, I mean, geez, he yelled at Triple H, supposedly, because he had a stinger in a match. This was last year, when he was still tag team champion. And they stopped the match on Raw. They stopped the match because they knew something was wrong. Bryan was pissed. Like, he, on camera, he was, like, trying to fight the guys off. This is for real. And so, supposedly, backstage, he yelled at Triple H, like, how dare you tell me when I can continue? I've wrestled in Japan, I've wrestled all over, how dare you? And I guess he got Triple H respect by doing it, by saying, that's the guy he is. He goes all out in all his matches. Sure. He doesn't let up. So guys like CM Punk, that they go all out, Daniel Bryan, they get burnt out mentally, and then physically, their bodies just, they're only in their early to mid-30s, but it's the wear and tear. It's like a basketball player. A basketball player like LeBron James play when they're like 19, by the time they're 32, it's the mileage. They're just done sometimes. Sometimes they're just done. Sometimes they just can't go anymore.
Well, back and forth up a court is going to do havoc on your knees.
It's just the mileage, though. Yeah. Anyway, it doesn't matter your age.
Yeah.
You know, it's just if you do it at something like that for 15 years, there's only so much your body can take. So what happens is John Cena is the champion now. I don't have a huge problem with it. I really don't. He's going to be a champion until they can build someone else up. He's transitional, but not hot shotting it to someone just for the sake of doing it, as if they do it. If they did it to someone like Bray Wyatt, it would be way too soon, and it's just not ready for it yet. They have to build someone to that.
No, that's fair. I mean, I guess I can't think of off the top of my head, I guess.
There's no one else. The roster's depleted.
Yeah.
It really is depleted. It is. You have these young guys like Roman Reigns, but they're not ready yet. They're just not. It's just too soon.
Well, yes. Yeah, exactly. And it would just seem... I guess at least with Cena as a guy who's had, you know, what, 15 now?
This is 15. Yeah.
It, at least it makes sense. If you threw it to someone like Roman Reigns or whatever, that doesn't make any sense.
No. And Reigns isn't ready. Reigns is
is a boring-ass wrestler.
He has a good setup and finisher, but he has no, like, good mid-match moves.
No, I'm done with people finishing with the spear, okay? It's the most boring fucking move in the world.
Superman punch, come on!
I do like the Superman punch.
I'm surprised no one used that before.
It's a pretty good punch.
It's a punch that never lands in mixed martial arts, which is why it's funny.
Yeah, it's a pretty funny punch, but he's not a good wrestler.
He's a semi-big guy that has a good look, has a good charisma. I love the fact that Dean Ambrose, which I knew would be huge.
Yeah.
Looking at his stuff back in, it was like FCW when it was Florida.
Yeah.
Championship Wrestling before it was NXT. One of the best guys on the mic that have probably come along in probably 15 years.
No, he's awesome. Did he have a match on Sunday?
Yeah, they threw him in the Money in the Bank. They threw him in there because the storyline now is that he's just after Seth Rollins'
That's
head
good.
Returning.
That'll
on.
Be fun.
So he's in the match, and Kane comes down and helps Seth Rollins win it when Dean Ambrose was going to win it. He was like getting close to winning it. So now it's like the hottest stories now, believe it or not, in the WWE is like Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins. People going nuts for that. Absolutely nuts. When you think about it, these are two guys, again, who weren't even wrestling for the WWE 2 years ago. And then Roman Reigns even just staring down Triple H on Raw, even teasing a potential future match, which would be great to build up Roman Reigns. And that's where Triple H is in his career now. He's obviously a lot older. He's like 45. His body's not what it was. He can't juice up anymore like he could 12 years ago. He can't. He was juiced up 12 years ago. Yeah. It was obvious. And so he's a guy that just built up other guys.
He can't
guys.
Put the needle of oil in his ass anymore. You know?
But Raw was good because it actually showed the desperation. Jericho came back to a huge pop.
See, that makes me happy. I'm glad to see Jericho is back.
Jericho's a good wrestler. He's a professional. He's great on the mic. He always puts on a good match. He's safe in the ring.
He's like the industry gold standard of good wrestler.
Yeah.
Is basically what Chris Jericho is.
Yeah.
Good personality, good as a heel, good as a face, good in the ring.
Never really injured, for the most part.
For the most part, he has
been
good.
Yeah, he's wrestled for 20 years.
Yeah, I've seen matches with him, you know, in Japan from like 94.
J Cups.
Yeah, like how old are you, dude? Fucking 15.
Yeah, he's like 42 by now, 41. But he came back to a huge pop after The Miz came back to absolutely apathy.
I don't even know who The Miz is. The Miz was before.
The Miz headlined, as I'll tell you, The Miz headlined WrestleMania a few years ago.
I know he did.
And beat John Cena when The Rock interfered.
Believe me, I know that. Like, I'm just saying, like, he left. He was demoted, thrown out, put on hold before I started watching again. And now he's just come back. And my buddy Jay always is just The Miz is awful.
He's better than average, but he's not. He's like, he's one of those guys that, wow, that's how bad wrestling was when he was, like, headlining all these pay-per-views a few years ago.
My same friend said he's like Miz, Kingston, Ziggler. He's like all of these guys. He's like, this was your headline.
But Ziggler's good, though, and Kingston's they're good wrestlers. They are.
I think Ziggler's okay, but Ziggler's never going to make it anywhere beyond where he is now.
I think if they gave him, first of all, he has an awful name. They gave him this awful name, this porn star name off of, you know, Dirk Diggler. And if he went to, like, say, like TNA or somewhere else and changed his name, he probably would do a lot better.
Except for the fact that no one does well in TNA, because it's TNA.
Well, but, I mean, when you look at the guy, he reminds you so much of Mr. Perfect. How he wrestles, how he sells moves, how fluid
he
is.
No, he does, and I like Mr. And I've got...
And Mr. Perfect should have been a champion. He should have been. He could have been a world champion. He should have been.
No, Macho Man should have been fucking world champion.
But Perfect was actually lined up for it.
Well, Macho Man was, but he should have beat Hogan. Anyways, whatever. Well,
Macho was world champion. What are you talking about? Macho was champion
I'm saying
like
he should have
times.
Beat Hogan clean for world
oh,
champion.
Oh, clean.
I'm still upset about that.
About Macho?
I'm going to go to necromancy school, bring Macho Man back from the grave,
just
and
beat Hogan.
Force Hogan to fight him. Just like
just
randomly
like, just
in
how,
his garage.
Like Hart never fought Hogan. Hogan dodged Bret Hart to fight him for real.
Hogan is such a piece of shit.
He put over Warrior at least. But anyway. So anyway, Raw was big.
Right, at least. Oh yeah, the one with the least talent is the one he puts over.
No, he was huge though, Warrior. That was the right thing to do. Anyway. So AJ Lee came back, which was very, very nice to see. And I guess her honeymoon with CM Punk, who she's now married to. In real life, in non-kayfabe. she came back, won the title back from Paige, who's a pretty good wrestler. The women's division is actually not in a bad place right now.
No, it's not.
Paige is good. Cameron's really good.
Actually, everyone in NXT is pretty good. We actually had a question about that.
Alicia Fox is pretty good. She's coming to her own.
Even some of the lower card ones, like Bayley and Emma on NXT, are good wrestlers. Like, pretty much everyone who wrestles in the women's division, and that's where it's all starting. That's like that's the fire right there, is NXT. They are really putting together a good women's division.
That is
very fun to watch with a lot of good wrestling.
Yeah, because I got away from it, unfortunately, during when it was the Ruthless Aggression era, between, say, 2001 to 2000 and, I guess, 8, technically, that was. What, PG era was around 2008, it started up. You just basically had a bunch of girls in bikinis and lingerie that didn't know how to wrestle, besides, you always had, like, Molly Holly, you had Trish Stratus, who learned how to wrestle little by little, and that's why she's in the Hall of Fame, because she actually was really good after she learned how to wrestle. You know, and you had Jazz, who was there for a little bit. You had Victoria, but that was like the exception to all these women that just came in, a lot from ECW, that, you know, didn't know how to wrestle. So you just give me the let's go thing. Is that what you just did?
I feel like we're running a little long on the wrestling.
This people want just us to talk about wrestling entirely on
a
podcast.
We have talked.
Don't
about
you
wrestling.
Ever do this again?
I will do this plenty.
Unless this is your new thing, besides sitting like the T-Rex up here on the chair.
I will do whatever I want.
You're doing yoga? I can't even do that. How do you even get your arms back
like
that?
It was simply a suggestion.
Uh-huh. Anyway, that's our talk about WWE. Ian?
Yeah.
God.
God. All right. think that takes us to Q&A.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't?
You added this topic, Ian. You discussed about Denny's.
Oh, God, right. Okay, where was this? Okay, so... this
asshole.
This is humorous. It's humorous partially for the outrage that... The full outrage that was caused online. So, Atari went bankrupt in 2013, right? Okay, they're crawling out of bankruptcy. And they tried to sell off their portfolio of over 200 games, and they couldn't do it.
No,
why?
One to buy.
Why? Because when you think of Atari, a lot of this is, I find this happens in the store all the time. Okay, when people are like, "Oh yeah, Atari," like Pac-Man and Galaxian, I'm like,
"Those aren't
no, that's sorry, no. Totally different." You just played that on an Atari.
yeah. It's like, what are the actual Atari games? You're like. Warlords?
Yeah, exactly.
Centipede?
These are not brands that you can really update and bring into the modern era.
They tried.
They tried.
Warlord and Centipede. I was there at E3 a few years ago.
And they failed. Yeah. So they tried to sell this portfolio of 200 games, and they couldn't. So,
200 games, including like backgammon?
Yeah.
And, what the hell's in there?
86 versions of checkers. So
Enduro?
They inked this deal with Denny's. Of all places.
Did they really?
Yes. And they put out a version of Atari Remix that replaces popular items with diner themed foods. So like Asteroids becomes Hashtroids.
That's hysterical.
And you're a ketchup bottle shooting down hash brown patties. And
this is great.
People were like upset about it and like, this is defiling video games history. And it's like, really? Really? How fucking closely do you identify with that brand? Okay, like how much does this really mean?
Hey, buddy, Breakout.
Yeah, Breakout's one of them, okay?
That's a game that I haven't played in 30 years, so you watch it, buddy.
I love Breakout Clones, but I haven't played it in Centipede, and I love Centipede.
I love Asteroids.
Yeah, and that's fun, but
there's
no
character to it, or there's no personality to destroy off Asteroids.
Right, you can't...
It's a fucking triangle.
It's been so long that these games have been destroyed by clones and remakes and all sorts of other things a billion times. Most of the time, at the hands of whoever owns the fucking Atari name, which hasn't been Atari since the mid-90s. So, I don't know, I just thought it was amusing that, you know, Denny's has... Denny.
What is it, off your phone? Or are these in the restaurant? Can I play this right now instead of doing this podcast? I want to play Asteroids, damn it.
So,
this is the greatest thing ever.
So people are
pissed at this?
People are like, upset, unformed. I can't believe this is happening. It's like, why? This company's bankrupt. They need money. They're going to sell anything to anyone, including Denny's. And oh my God.
They didn't sell the rights away. They're just doing these little app games?
Yeah, but where's the fucking marketing speak on this? The marketing speak on some of this is just, it's just beautiful. For whatever reason, it's not showing up on my topic list, so click on the article. And,
I'm on the article.
Yeah. Just scroll down a little. Just find yourself some quotes from Denny's or Atari about brands and things and nostalgia.
Here's Atari's press release. Inspired by Denny's new Greatest Hits Remix menu, which features a selection of the diner's iconic dishes, all with a new culinary spin. Yes, because we can spin Moons Over Miami.
Yes.
Three of Atari's most famous games, and one's only that you know about, by the way, Asteroids, Centipede, and Breakout, have been remixed as Hashtroids, Centipup, and Takeout.
A pup, by the way, would refer to their new pancake pups that you can get. Yeah.
Okay.
Delicious. Delicious with a little powdered sugar.
Beyond just a new name, the games will feature diner elements such as flying hash browns and syrup bottle shivers. This is the best news all year. This is better than Shovel Knight. Oh, God. I don't see it. Who can? Yeah, they came out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
Yeah, they're just doing what... this is... Everyone, leave Atari alone. They're just doing what they need to do to feed their mouths.
I mean, Jesus Christ, Atari used to publish games like even Unreal Tournament, right? That was like 14 years ago, though.
Do you think that they're getting paid in like vouchers for like Grand Slams?
I want to go on YouTube now and see people's angry vlogs or vlogs about why this is awful.
This is ruining the state of classic gaming.
Then you should have fucking bought the Centipede Invasion remake game that came out a few years ago then. Oh, you should have bought... I was going to even say Frogger World Tour, but that's a Konami. That's not even... I can't even think of Atari games. I really can't. I can't think of them, Ian. That was funny. Thanks for adding that to the topic list.
Beat 'em and eat 'em.
That's on Atari, though.
Well, but if it was, it'd be so perfect. But that'd be perfect. Whip up the batter.
Beat it.
All right.
This is genius. You want to think of some more other Atari games?
Nope. Because I have 10% battery left, so let's go through the let's go through the Q&A. All
right.
It's Q&A time.
Q&A on the Pat and Ian show.
Q&A. All right.
Oh, God.
Sean Richardson at Replica 2112. Pat and Ian, how do you feel about people who buy flashcards to play retro games?
You're horrible individuals and should be locked up in the gulag.
Honestly, my answer to that has changed significantly recently. I do like to own carts for things like PC Engine and whatnot, but for other game systems, I don't feel horrible about flashcards. I'm not... I mean, whatever.
To me, obviously, this is... And technically, they're illegal flashcards. If you want to... If you say you own the games like I do, we use the... you know, I go to conventions and use a flashcard because it's easier versus, you know, lugging 50 carts around. Fine, whatever. To me, it comes back to the argument of... a lot of these corporations are gone.
Yeah, you're not...
They're not making money. You know, there's no one selling Lee Trevino's Fighting Golf. You're not hurting them by putting on a flash cart. If you want to say the argument that, hey, but you can buy some of these games in the 3DS or the Wii U, is Nintendo hurting for money? Do they need to sell you Super Mario 3 in the 15th iteration? You know, I mean, one of the things when I bought a 3DS, I was like, wow, maybe I'll buy an NES game if they're a couple of bucks. They're charging $5 for an NES game. What?
Well, and
really?
And the other thing is, flash carts aren't any... really different theoretically than something like emulators. They also don't really, I don't feel like they hurt stores like us,
really,
like Luna, okay. Because the guy who wants to go out and buy a copy of Game X or the girl who wants to go and grab a copy of Alfred Chicken, that's not a game that any normal person buys, but it's just an example.
I like Alfred Chicken.
It's not bad. They're going to do it anyways. Otherwise they would have had tons of other ways to play these games without paying money for them prior. The flash card is just another option. I don't see it as being particularly damaging.
Yeah, I always look at it as it's an addition. I don't know of anyone, even though it can be proved wrong, I don't know anyone that just goes out there and buys a flash card for every single system, that buys a Genesis, Super Nintendo,
right.
NES, you know, Vector. I don't know anyone. People usually do that and they sell it. They love it so much that they discover that maybe after the fact.
Yeah.
Because I thought about getting a Vectrex multi-card, the Sean Kelly one. I wouldn't have done that unless, first of all, I bought the system and a few games to actually play.
Yeah.
You know.
That's even my computer.
So they're not evil?
No.
They're not evil.
I don't think you're a horrible person if you have one.
Well, thank you, Ian.
You're welcome.
This is from at Konacha37. Do you think we are headed into another video game crash soon? Since this has been brought up by others before, maybe not as big. No. And this is why. The video game market has matured to the place where it's a multi-billion dollar industry now. It makes more than motion pictures does, you know. When the video game crash happened in 83, I'm cribbing off of the segment from the video game years. Video games were in its infancy still.
Well, and more importantly, there was no support underneath it. There was no structural support to video games in 83. If something happens now, it's not going to be a crash, it's going to be a recession, because there's a whole industry built up underneath it. It will go through a rough time, perhaps, but it's not going to crash. There's too much underneath it to keep it...
I don't even see it going through even a recession
to keep it up.
Because it's like, this is what kids are brought up on now. Well, when games were out in the early 80s and late 70s, they weren't ingrained with everyone yet. They were looked at as a fad, like, this is new. This is like, think of like having like a board game... but an electronic version of it. It wasn't that far off from that's how video games were kind of thought of, where this is just a kind of a game or toy that you can play. It wasn't like this whole cultural and new form of entertainment yet. It wasn't established where this is, you know, now it's, you know, movies, watching sports, watching TV, video games, music. It wasn't like that before. It wasn't thought of like middle-aged people would be like, oh, what's this? This is a video game? Like, what the fuck is that? That wasn't there 5 years ago, you know? So it's a lot different. A lot's changed in 30 years, thankfully, with that.
True.
Is that it? True that, yo?
True.
And plus, as Chris Kohler said, on video game years, they were looked at video games as a transitional product to computers at the time.
Right.
Because home computers were new. Everything was new. So everything was trying to find their way into the market. Where do they stand? Are people just going to go to computers and then forget about video games?
know what I mean? That's what some people thought. So, this is from at S.A. Caitlin. Here's a question for the CU podcast. What's the creepiest stalker experience you and Pat have ever had? I don't know if Ian has stalkers.
No, I have.
Store stalkers? You've told me the story. But, well, you chose to go to that party.
I didn't. I thought there was going to be more people there.
Okay, that's a whole story. You want to tell a story now?
No, I can't tell that whole story now. It's like an hour. It's like, no, it's
the,
like a...
the greatest story I've ever heard. That has to be, one day it has to be a whole topic.
We will do an entire topic on this at some point. Okay. Because it's a long story. It's about 20 minutes long, and I'm going to vibrate, and I'm going to shake a lot. But I've had two major stalkers in my time working at Luna. One was far less harmful. It was like a 17-year-old girl. She was very nice, and she came into the store, and for reasons that I am not trying to get fucking a big head about it, for reasons I cannot fathom, she found me to be an interesting person.
I don't know why.
I don't know why either. And she just kept coming in and, like, asking me all these questions and hanging around. And finally her mom came in the one day and she said, and her mom's really nice. And her mom's actually closer to me in age than her daughter is. And her mom was like, is my daughter being weird around you? I said, yes. She goes, because I think she has a crush on you. And I said, well, that's adorable, but can we both agree that that's kind of inappropriate? And she's like, yep, we can both agree that that's inappropriate.
I think the mom wanted you.
So I stopped. Oh, Jesus Christ. Not everyone wants everyone, Patrick. So anyways, you know, I stopped seeing so much of her. And like, she was, like I said, she was very nice, but it was just like, it was a little creepy, and she'd just come around every fucking day and not really say anything and just stand at the counter and stare. The bigger problem was, I'm just going to say it. I'm going to get stabbed in the throat, but I have evidence. I have notes. I've told the story so many times. There's this guy named Max who came into the store. Do you hear that, Max? You're probably listening, because I don't think you've forgotten about me, and I'm tensing up just thinking about it. He owned a pig once. He owned a pig. Big pig. Big. Later on, though. Max used to come into the store and drop a lot of money. And he used to stay there for like 6, 7, 8 hours at a time. He had a guy named Clay. Clay would take him to the store, and Clay would sit in the Jeep and stare out the front window. He wouldn't read, he wouldn't do crossword puzzles, he wouldn't play games, he would stare out the front window for 7 to 8 hours while Max just shopped and talked. And eventually, Max asked me if I wanted to go to his birthday party. I was like, I'm bad at saying no to things. Like, when is your birthday? And he's like, this day. And I'm like, yeah, I'm off. And he's like, okay, so you want to come to the birthday? And I said, sure, I'll go to your birthday for a couple hours. I was the only person at the birthday party. In a house where guys, this is just a taster. You'll get the full story later. There was a Cyclops on the front door. His mom owned a boarding house. There was a Cyclops on the front door, and you could push the Cyclops' eye out, and you could see out the front door to see who was coming in. There was spray-painted poetry going up the staircase walls that his mom had spray-painted there, and then Max's old room was painted orange from top to bottom, and it just said, fuck you, Mom, on the ceiling. We walked past the rooms. We walked past the rooms of a couple of the people who lived there. Everyone in the house laid in the fetal position on their side, staring out the window. The fetal position was the only position in this boarding house. He wrote a comic about me. He made a video game about me. We'll talk more about all of this later at a later time.
Is this the tease?
This is just the tease. I don't feel good. My ass is puckering. It is so tight. I could break steel right now. So that's that.
I want to see this comic so
there you go, life. Caitlin. That's part of it. That's part of it. That's part of that story.
And the funny thing is, Ian gave away all spoilers? Oh no, there's a lot more to that.
There's a lot more to that. I haven't told you nearly everything.
Oh, it's going to be awkward between you and Max. Oh, God.
I've never...
I love the CU podcast. I love my own podcast.
So what's next? Take us to a happy place, Pat.
I have not had that experience, Ian. I'll just say that.
It's good. Take me to
it. This is from at Anxious Lib. Either Lib for Libby or Lib for Liberal. Who knows? What do you guys think of pinball games? You obviously enjoy the real thing more, but are there any you enjoy?
Yeah. Just not ones in boarding houses. I enjoy the Crush series very much. The physics were very good for the time, and the rules were inventive. I like Alien and Devil's Crush probably equally. Alien Crush, it appears to be more simplistic. It's only a two-stage game, a two-frame, like a two-level game. But I love the setting, especially as an Aliens fan. You know, there's a few nods. I also think that the stuff that Zen Pinball and Farsight Studios is doing with the Pinball Arcade is great. You gotta understand, pinball machines are expensive to buy, they're expensive to play if you can find them around your house. So just finding anything that's even remotely close to these things is really nice. And no, I like quite a few. There are some awful ones, but there's good ones too. Rockin' Ball on the NES.
Rockin' Ball is really fun. The two-player mode is fantastic.
Right, you and I have fun with that every marathon. Yeah. The two-player mode's great.
Now I gotta think of something. I usually don't like pinball games on game console. I just don't. It just, to me, part of the feeling is seeing the ball move and hitting the bumpers and the ramps. That to me is a lot of it. I just don't get. Now, I used to play Pin Mame a lot because that was fun. But it still does. It's not the same thing. I mean, I enjoy it, but it's just there's something about the mind meld between man and machine when you're playing.
That's the real physics.
Yeah.
I agree with you on that point. It's not a replacement by any means. It's just, it's the methadone. It's the methadone when you can't go play real pinball. Sure. You know, it works.
Your fiance is in the chat room, and she's asking a special question. Ask Ian about ranch dressing in the bathroom.
No!
Man, I guess him player.
No, I don't want to.
Ranch dressing in the bathroom, man.
Bonnie, why? I don't want to talk about the ranch dressing. Not right now. We can do that later. Talk about the ranch dressing in the bathroom at another time. Another time. Another goddamn time. When the full story, he had ranch dressing in his bathroom. He had ranch dressing in his bathroom. I went to go take a piss, and I got up, walked away. I wasn't sitting on that toilet seat. Why would I? I was pissed anyway. And I went and I washed my hands. And I went to go reach for soap. And what did I find in my hands? But not soap. Not soap. Not soap. A razor blade and a full unopened packet. A full unopened package of Jack in the Box house buttermilk sauce. Unopened. Just completely untouched. So I walk back into the bedroom. I walk back into the bedroom, and at this point, my mind is fucking frayed. It's shot, it's going out the window, and I looked at Max, and very deadpan, I said, "So, Max, do you shave with ranch dressing?" Ugh. And he said, "Get all upset," and he goes, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, on the side of your sink in the bathroom, there's a razor resting atop a package of ranch dressing." And he goes, "Oh, no, 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 I don't do that. I saw that. I don't know why it was there."
We're talking like a safety razor, right? Like a Bic razor?
Yeah, Bic razor.
Just making sure it wasn't a switchblade.
No.
That's the full story, and so glad you got it out now.
That's not the full story.
That's a teaser?
Well, that was the ranch. That was the full ranch part.
Oh, yeah, there's... Yeah. Okay. We'll do this every week, I think.
Still haven't gotten through the comic or the video game.
Well, this is going to be a multi-part special. This is like the Lord of the Rings release dates. This is like once a year. Every December, we're going to have a great installment.
Oh, God.
Holy shit. Oh, man. Oh. Next question. From Sour Juggernaut.
I just want to go home and lay in the fetal position, surprisingly.
Jesse Balcom, 62, asks, do you think there's a line to be crossed when it comes to overcollecting? For example, time to play your game, storage issues.
Yes, definitely. Pat's the example of overcollecting.
Thank you, Ian. Well, like any sort of good person who was studied psychology for a while, usually this goes for hoarding, whatever else. It gets to the point where or gambling or... Trying to be a little more serious, it's a problem when it starts affecting other parts of your life.
Yes.
So when you drink in excess, is it a problem? It's kind of hard to be objective until it affects other parts of your life that you find important, like your family, your friends, your job, any other hobbies you used to like doing. So until it gets to that point, for whatever reason, it's not a problem. We're talking about gaming. In terms of collecting, do you have the money to collect?
Yeah.
Should you really be spending that money on food, on your rent, on clothes? Should you be not be, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, a lot of collectors have, you know, OCD that leads them to do other stuff besides that. But are you spending way too much time searching for eBay deals every day? Are you spending like 8 hours looking for deals? You know, are you doing that instead of living your life doing other things?
Yeah.
You know, are you spending hours a day just cleaning your games to make them look perfect and rearranging them? In terms of space, you know, are you disheveled? Are you tripping over your games? Okay, be careful. But I mean, is it to the point though where, you know, where it's you can't even find stuff and it's disgusting? You know, so I mean, there's limits. Obviously, it's common sense. Is it having a negative impact on your life with anything? With anything, any hobby you're doing, you can even exercise too much and it becomes, you have a negative impact on your life. You know, whatever it is that you do, you need a balance. Yes, Ian, you are in danger of that, I know. But that's what it comes down to. I don't know if you have anything to add about that.
No, I mean, I feel like Pat's approach to it is reasonable, and that's for but that's for
the, well, then again, this was over a dozen, 15 years of collecting.
No, I'm saying what you've said is reasonable. And probably fits a lot of people, because it's over many years and it's your main hobby. It's what you really care about. My definition of reaching a limit for me, and I think for people who are a little bit more casual, people who don't get in super into the actual collecting aspect, is do you just have way more than you're ever going to play? How many games do you own that you haven't played? And I'm not saying that like in regards to you, because that number is allowed to be a lot higher because you look at the hobby in a different way. For someone like me, if I get to a certain number of games where there's been too many, where I have too many that I haven't played, mm-hmm. that's when I have to slow down, play through some games, and ease back on it. Because things like records, I don't ever build up records. I always listen to them right away. You know, like stuff like that. So like, I don't need a backlog in all these hobbies that I am part of. I only can afford one or two backlogs, so that's when I know I've gone overboard with games.
Cool. Well, there's a few more. We can get through some of these. This is from at Roach Queen. If you're Italian-American, do you think Mario is a bad stereotype of your people or a good role model?
Pat?
Well, being of mostly Italian
yes.
descent, I don't think about Mario as being an Italian. It's almost like that's been downplayed a little bit, you know? He has the over-the-top accent, which I guess, is that offensive? I don't give a shit. I don't look at myself as Italian. I'm an American. That's how I am. I'm third generation. I didn't go for Italy in the World Cup, went for the U.S., you know? I know there's people that are second generation. I had a friend who he would even watch the U.S. He'd just go for Italy. It's not a big deal to me. I don't care. I'm not going to let a cartoon character stereotype define me. And I think that's what it comes down to a lot of people is don't let shit like that define who you are. Why would you? You're above you know, any stereotype like that.
Sure.
For whatever it is. Who cares?
As my friend John put it, he was like, oh, Mario, what a lovable racist stereotype.
It's not racist, though. It's ethnic.
Ethnic.
I'm more offended by shows like Jersey Shore. You know, with Guido's. I mean, that's what offends me, because now people are going to think, when I first moved here, when Jersey Shore was really popular, I moved here 2009, 2010.
You should all see Pat's lip gloss collection. It's huge.
People would ask me when I met someone, you know, go on a date with someone, they'd be like, is it really like that? Jersey, is that what it's really like?
Yes.
Unfortunately, that is. Some of it is.
Yeah.
But it's like, then they ask you, are you like that? And it's like, no. That's why I moved the fuck away from Jersey. This is from at Ryan versus Jim. What's your biggest pet peeve when playing games with a friend? I.e. always steals the power-ups.
I would say my biggest pet peeves when playing with a friend, a lot of these pull from youth. It was just that I had a buddy who always thought he was better at games, and he would always give me like the beat-up controller, and anytime that I'd win, he'd say that I was cheating or that the computer was cheating. When you're playing with friends, obviously local, I think that's not so much a pet peeve, what he's talking about, like the stealing the power-ups, as it is how the games these days are designed and how you're supposed to play them. You're supposed to steal the power-ups, you know? I mean, you're supposed to work co-op if you want, but yeah, it's fun to, you know, bounce on your buddy's head in New Super Mario Brothers, fuck him over, and steal the power-up. You know, that's kind of a fun thing. But no, as a kid, it was always just the fact that when you played with friends, they always never seemed to be able to accept defeat very easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in my Tecmo Bowl review, I remember a story about my friend Kevin, who used to cheat at Tecmo Bowl by looking at my plays.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a person that cheats at board games. I mean, you have to have some freaking honor, at least.
Yeah. Well, what's the fun in cheating at a board game, anyway?
You cheat at a board game? You're a scumbag.
You're a low-class individual.
Because there has to be some sort of integrity to the board game.
Yes.
Because the rules are defined. The pieces are there. It's not a video game where it's programmed. You're programming yourself to play the game properly. So anyway, the whole point is that, what were we talking about? Oh, pet peeves with two-player games? Never letting you be the first player. My sister never let me be the first player. That's why I love Luigi so much, because I was always Luigi. It was my system, Monica. My system, my game. Let me be Mario once, goddammit!
All right. So now that that's out.
Okay.
It's out in the open.
This is from @Tom_Tooth. When is a good time to start collecting for more recent systems? PS2, PSP, Xbox 360, and PS3. Whenever you want to.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your goal? Is your goal just to get every game, get it cheap, do it as soon as you can? I mean, well, for stuff like PS2, when stuff is new, wait for the games to be used after a few months and buy them for like 15, yeah, I mean, 10 bucks.
Whatever. Honestly, like 6 months ago, a year ago, it would have been a great time to start for PS2 if that's what you wanted to do, because everything is cheap as shit. With few exceptions.
That's all we have for that?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any tips for collecting any of these systems? It's just...
No, just 2 months. Like, I would say like a couple months after a new system gets launched.
Well, for stuff like the last generation or two, like Xbox games are mostly worthless. PS2 games are mostly worthless.
Right. I would say like...
But they won't be forever.
No. Right now is a good time to start, especially... Let's leave PS2 behind. If you want to collect for PS3 or especially 360, right now, 360 games... If you wanted to collect for 360, those things are cheap as shit. I mean, you can get those pretty much anywhere. There's very few games that go for an abnormal amount of money.
A lot of digital downloads too by 360. So yeah, so the price goes down.
Yeah, not a lot of abnormal amounts of money, and there's not a whole lot of new games coming out. So you don't have to worry about, if you want to stay on top of it, you're not going to have to worry about paying $60 for new titles for much longer. And I mean, honestly, these things drop in price to $35 within 2-3 months, anyways.
Okay. A couple more before we go to our wacky questions. Actually, that's it. We are on our wacky questions.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. We got through this. We started like 15 minutes late, so wow. This is from @J_Northcoast. Ian, do you like goats?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. They're pretty cool. They're cute.
Yeah. This is from @Rapture in Venice. If someone mods a Sega Nomad with a different LCD from another device... Is this still really a Nomad?
If a tree falls in the forest, but no one is around to hear it, does it still make a sound? Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know, man. We talked about modding last week. I guess, technically, by a purist...
Is it really a Nomad?
Really a Nomad? By a purist standard, no. But if you came in and told me that you had a Nomad to sell, I'd look at it as a Nomad.
This is from @Sid... CYDR Sid Year? Chris, that's
Cider.
What?
Cider?
Cider? Okay, maybe it's cider. Oh, it is cider.
That's my guess.
Did you ever cover gaming while intoxicated? Funny stories related to this, maybe. Drunk gaming. Did you ever have any drunk gaming experiences?
Yeah, one of my favorites is about 2 days before I moved from Buffalo to San Diego. My good friend John and I sat down in his apartment and... Yeah, this is how I remember the story, anyways. We sat down in his apartment with the decision to beat Bubble Bobble legitimately. We bought a 24-pack of beer, and we played. And it took us... We did beat it. We did. We went all through 99, grabbed the pearl or whatever the fuck, did the next 99, did the 20 bonus missions, then beat the boss with 2 players. And it took us like 4 or 5 hours. It shouldn't have... But it did, because we kept drinking beer as the time went on. But it is one of my proudest achievements, because we were quite saturated with alcohol, and it was just kind of one of those fun memories I have from, like, right before I left.
I don't recall ever doing any drunk gaming. I'm trying to think of maybe, teenager or 20s. I really didn't really drink it a lot outside of college in terms of groups. Then again, yeah, college. I'm trying to think. Yeah, gaming drunk probably would have been college for the most part. Maybe drunk Smash Brothers. Something like that, or Mario Kart. Hell, the marathon, I'm drunk on life during NES marathon.
I mean, I play, it's, you know, I play often. I mean, a lot of times, like, I'll have a beer and I'll play, you know, more than a couple of the times that we've played Mario Kart 8 with people online, especially when John was in town visiting, actually, you know, we were drunk. But I'm just thinking of, like, particularly memorable moments would be, like, beating Bubble Bobble.
There you go. I think that's about wraps up our CU podcast.
We did it.
Lots of ups and downs, emotional roller coaster.
A lot of facets, a lot of ins and outs.
A lot of ins and outs, gutters and strikes.
A lot of ranch dressing. Fuck, I'm done.
So, this was a very entertaining CU podcast. Look out for the season 6 finale of Pat the NES Punk. By the time you hear this, it'll be on the YouTube. It'll be on thepunkeffect.com. We enjoy and appreciate your patronage of the CU Podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, thepunkeffect.com. For Ian Ferguson, my name is Pat Contry. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
I love you.
Oh. Oh, remember, I'm going to be at Con Bravo and SGC in July. SGC, the weekend of July 11th through the 13th, and Con Bravo, the 18th to the 20th.
I won't be. If you want to have fun, pester Pat and Screenwave Media about that.
Because Ian wants to be bought out to go there. all right, drink your Tecate. We're going to sign off.
It's empty.
Good night, everybody.